Welcome to the inaugural episode of Ripple Conversations, a podcast that's not your typical diversity and inclusion podcast. I'm Sharon Martis, and I'm thrilled to embark on this journey with you. Ripple Conversations was born out of the Illuminate program, composed of LSEC Black and Latinx employees and their allies. This group is committed to fostering an environment where everyone feels seen, heard, and valued. In each episode, we'll dive into a variety of topics that matter to our community. We'll hear personal stories of triumph and challenges, explore the impact of diversity in the workplace, and discuss actionable strategies to promote inclusion. Our goal is to create a space where conversations about race, identity, and culture are open, honest, and most importantly, transformative. Today, I want to introduce you to some of the talented individuals that are here to share their stories. We will focus on a hot topic we uncovered, which is a sense of belonging. Welcome, Balbir Bakshi. He is the Group Chief Risk Officer at LSEC, and you might already recognize him from other diversity programs here at LSEC, as he is also the Exco sponsor for the LSEC Pride Network and also the Illuminate program. Welcome for being here.
Thank you.
And then Nick Steele, he is the head of Rates Risk at LCH, also based in London. And Nick joined the Illuminate program as an ally. He's always been an advocate for equality and fairness, but this is the first time that actually Nick joined a diversity and inclusion program. And he has the opportunity to amplify the stories of underrepresented communities. And then we have Carol Campaign. She is the managing director of the diversity practice and a pioneer in diversity and inclusion initiatives. During the Illuminate program, Carol took us under her wing. She awakened our potential and equipped us with the essential tools to tackle the wicked problem. When I first joined the Illuminate program, I had no idea what I was embarking on, especially because it took place in the workplace. There were a lot of lessons, eye-opening lessons, but one that profoundly impacted me was the danger of the single story, and mainly because it leads to the formation of stereotypes. This lesson for me feels particularly relevant because it really pushes us to focus on our own biases and our blind spots. And it couldn't be more relevant given all the unrest we've seen in the world since 2020. Our world is changing rapidly in front of us, and it underlines the importance of seeking multiple perspectives, different viewpoints, engaging with people of different backgrounds, truly listening to their stories, and challenging preconceived notions and stereotypes. It is empirical that we are receptive and mindful of really avoiding rapid judgment based solely on a single narrative, and instead that we actively seek and share diverse narratives and stories in order to combat and help reduce the nature of a single story. Having said that, Nick, you joined me into the Illuminate program. You joined as an ally, and we sat through together to many of the lessons that we learned, that were initiated by Carol and Paul. You are committed to fostering change and enhancing equity and inclusion at LSEC. Can you please share with us what were some of the main things that you learned during the Illuminate program?
Well, thanks for the introduction. I learned so many things, and a bit like yourself, there were so many that I wasn't expecting during the period. I thought I knew a bit about the subject. I've always been somebody who's championed equality, tried to notice where things weren't fair. However, the main thing I've learned throughout the program is that I need to challenge my own thinking. Mm-hmm. I need to challenge myself. There is so much going on externally in the world that we are not privy to the internal conversations and perspectives of others. But also, I think the decisions that we are making every day subconsciously and how they might affect others. In some of the specifics that I took away was that the problem is more real and happening right now, here, everywhere. I think that the evidence is entirely overwhelming if you choose to view it objectively. We see data coming out from multiple places, but the real step forward for this program was the very personal aspect. As we met people, discussed amongst ourselves, and actually often listened to very powerful but upsetting personal accounts of how people had been treated by the world more generally, mm-hmm. and how they, for me, became the absolute proof.
So what was the aha moment for you in the entire program? What was the moment that really, like, turned the switch, you know, like, aha,
this is something bigger.
Yes.
I think we were very lucky to be doing lots of practical exercises. And right. I think this is a whole subject you learn through doing and through sort of personally challenging where you are rather than listening to somebody lecturing you. Mm-hmm. And one of those was very much around identity and stereotypes. Right. And I view that as pivotal to me. If I can just go into a bit of detail, we were tasked with sort of defining what you'd view as your identity. And to be honest, it's something I don't often think about. And I, when pushed, thought about some of my character traits and indeed the odd flaw, but also, and then sort of things like the importance of family to my personal life. It was very clear, speaking to the other people, particularly the Black and Latinx leaders, that race or gender was central to how they immediately identified their identity. Mm-hmm. This obviously was somewhat of a shock, but pretty obvious had I spent the time thinking about it. As we move then into sort of majority-minority sort of dynamics and associated stereotypes, it became clear that as we identified the top three of like the majority groups that tend to define the world, particularly here in London where I am, they were whether you were white, whether you were English-speaking, or whether you're male. And I seemed to notice that of a big group and broad, diverse set of people we were with, I was the only person that fit that criteria. At which point, when everybody sort of turns to you and says, well, we're trying to fix this and you've possibly got the most influence, what are you going to do about it? And to suddenly feel part of that as a minority, very briefly, in that scenario, felt an enormous pressure. I became almost quite defensive, but I believe in inequality. But it became clear that what I was doing was not enough, and I needed to get off the sidelines to actually make a more active change. And that's when I realized that this is going to be down to me and people like me.
So then what advice would you give others that would like to be, you know, an ally, a better ally?
Well, one very obvious one would be to come and talk to us. Talk to those who have been lucky enough to be on this amazing Illuminate journey that LSEG has been sponsoring through the XCO. If you can, and if you feel confident, is to take the plunge and talk to some Black and Latinx people about the topic. Which might be difficult. It's hard to use the right language. People like myself have been scared of getting it wrong, and that's a barrier we need to dilute. Mm-hmm. Possibly an easy way in can be just to say, like, I'm sorry, I'm going to get some of the language wrong. I'm not an expert in this, but can we talk about this? Because I think it matters.
The disclaimer up front.
Because, I mean, I make more mistakes than anyone else I know. Mm-hmm. But if you admit you're going to do it, people are much more accepting. And I think if you can do that, then we can start the conversations. And without the conversations, I don't think we'll get the change.
Thank you, Nick. Balbir, you've been committed to creating an even more inclusive workplace by being the Exco sponsor of the Illuminate program and also the LSEG Pride Network. You've been an advocate for people to bring their authentic self to work. Why has LSEG invested in the Illuminate program?
I'll probably answer that two ways. Okay. So about 3.5 years, LSEG bought Refinitiv, a larger organization than LSEG was back then. So it sort of bought a significantly larger organization. So you were bringing together two different companies with different cultures at different states of maturity on a range of different topics. And the aspiration for LSEG was big then and it's big now. So we want to be one of the world's best companies. And I think we know that to be one of the world's best companies, we need to get this topic right. And so from the outset, and I joined, that was around the time I joined, mm-hmm. there was a very real commitment from the executive team to focus on this and to get this right. And at that time, knowing that we've got some way to travel. But I think the deeper thought process is very much what Nick was talking about. So the importance of allies and sponsorship, really important. And you mentioned me being the executive sponsor for LSEG Pride, and I've been that sponsor for 3 years. And one of the key journeys also Nick was talking about is the learning journey that I've been on. Mm. So you could call me a diverse individual, but I'd be in a very different group when it comes to LGBTQIA. Like I'd be on the other side.
Ally.
I'd be on the ally on the sponsorship side. And the more I've leaned in and been willing to have that conversation and admitting with, you know, I might get this wrong, I might ask a dumb question. And historically, I think most people have been quite scared of asking those questions because you don't want to offend.
Right.
But then you don't have the conversation and then you don't learn.
Right. That's the danger.
And that's so powerful. Like the conversations I've had and what I've been exposed to has just led me to become a more passionate ally. And I use the word sponsor because that's how that's kind of what I want to be. I want to sponsor people. I want to sponsor the whole community. And then not just for Pride, but across different elements of diversity. But, you know, so someone with the demographics that Nick described for himself, an individual like that could be neurodiverse. Or it could have a hidden disability of some other means that you can't see. So they may also be diverse in a way that you can't see. So I think the more we speak about this, the better. So that's very much coming from the company's perspective and seeing it. And then for me personally, as I've had these conversations, and this is literally going back to that learning I've had over the past 3.5 years, I realized, okay, so if I go back to my career and how I got to the progression that I've seen, there have been some really key people along that journey. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't know at the time, but those people were allies and sponsors. They believed in me. They supported me. They took a chance on me. They gave me a step up when I wasn't ready. Right. And that actually goes to the heart of this program and programs like this. That's the intention. That's what we're trying to do with these programs.
Because it matters, yes. Yeah. So what motivated you personally to prioritize diversity and inclusion within LSAC?
So I mentioned I've been on a journey.
Right.
Probably until I got to LSAC, I didn't really talk about myself.
Mm.
Like I never spoke about myself. So this goes to me, you know, being quite a private person.
Mm-hmm.
A big period of time in my own history, I sort of hid, almost like I'm very visibly diverse, but I hid my diversity.
Right.
So I sort of pretended in my mind that I'm the same. I grew up in a very white middle class neighborhood and school, and I was one of two Indian kids in the school. And when I was up until the age of 11 years old, I didn't wear a turban. And then I went to my secondary school and my identity changed. And that was a really big deal for me because I was sort of 11 years old and you kind of then changing and you're growing a beard and everyone's looking cool. And I'm like, you know, I've got this kind of fluffy stuff on my face. I didn't think I looked cool. And so I was on the back foot. And so for a long period, and even when I started work, I sort of pretended I was the same as, you know, everyone else around me typically. And I didn't admit my diversity, certainly didn't embrace it. And so I wasn't being my authentic self. And you spoke about acting. And I think there's an element to us, to all of us, that are acting every day.
Mm-hmm.
And
to fit in
and how much energy you expel by doing that, you only realize later on. And so you're like, okay, and then you get a bit older, you get a bit wiser, and you might get to a certain level where you say, how much do I care about this acting anymore? Like, you know, why am I doing this? And actually a number of people came to me in my last job and said, and my daughter, like 23-year-old daughter, who's my life coach, basically.
Wow.
She said to me, very wise, so super wise. I learned a lot from her. So she said, okay, you should use your position to promote ethnic diversity. And this was was two jobs ago. And I said, I don't think I need to, because I look around me and, you know, I've worked for organizations that have had a black CEO and an Indian CEO. So I've seen senior diverse individuals. So I was like, I'm not sure I need to do that. But then as you talk to people, so I'm speaking at an ethnicity event with two other Sikh men who came up to me, they wear turbans. And I told them about a story when, I first presented to the risk committee at my first job in the late 90s, and I was in London, and this was in a video call to Switzerland, and the Swiss chairman leant over to my colleague in Switzerland while I was presenting and said, "My Balbir speaks really good English." And my view, and then like my colleague came back, we had a good laugh about it. My view was, great, he knows my name, he's going to remember me, and like that's good progress. Mm. And I told these two other guys, and they were like, we would be horrified with that. That's unacceptable.
Not progress.
Yeah. But the point to me was, my lived experience could be very different to the lived experience of someone who looks exactly like me.
Yeah. And that's exactly the danger of a single story.
Yeah. Single story, stereotypes, all of these things, other biases that you have. And I might have a bias towards, you know, my own acceleration at whatever cost, but being maybe ignorant to what's really going on. And part of me probably was ignorant as a mechanism to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So I tried to not expend too much energy on that topic. But somebody else may be more sensitive, maybe a bit more in touch with things and may see things differently.
Absolutely. So in everything you've just described and coming in, what challenges have you encountered then in promoting diversity and inclusion from where you were to where you are today? And how did you address them?
At LSEG?
Yes.
So I think there's a few things. I think we've made really good progress. So one, you really need a bought-in executive team. You can't have a split vote at the executive level and then you just end up ticking some boxes. So I think you need genuine intent at the executive level. And I think we've been lucky to have that. Since I've been here, we've had that and we have that now. And so very big, genuine push of people around the executive table to make this work. And that started like at the time I joined. We push various different policy changes through, like our parental leave thing, just to sort of contribute in loads of different ways. There's no one thing that's going to make this happen. There's a collection of things, and demonstrating genuine intent and making these small progress steps each time. So real positive aspect there. And then I think our employee networks are the best I've seen at any company I've worked at, in terms of how much people embrace and how much time they spend. And so real genuine intent from the employee side to make a difference and demonstrate and give advice to us and people in the sort of EDI team as to what would be the game-changing things that we should be thinking about. And the initial answer might be not right time, but they won't give up. So the leverage you get from those networks really good.
They also promote the sense of belonging.
They really do, yeah. Because you can belong in that network. Mm-hmm. And then some of those networks, like the Pride Network now, is huge. And that's really helpful because that's full of allies, sponsors, and people from the community. So it's a very mixed group of people. And the bigger they get, then you're covering a percentage of the company. So that's all really good. I think the biggest challenge is, like, people need to see role models in senior positions so that they can say, yeah, I can get there, and that's why I can get there. Right. We've been, as I said, we've two companies coming together, and we've been through a number of restructurings. So that's a challenge, because you might have a role model and then you restructure, sell a business or something, and then all of a sudden, because there's not many, they're gone.
Right.
And people might read into that, oh, okay, are we really making progress? Mm-hmm. So you might take a step back. But I think the overriding point for me is this takes time. It takes real time to make meaningful change. So you can hit a target really quickly, but have you really made sustainable, lasting change in how the place feels? So that's what we're trying to do, is change the way that the company feels. And I think we are making progress, but it takes time.
Well, time it will take, but at least we're getting there. We're in the process.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Balbir. Carol. During the Illuminate program, as you are aware, we were giving a change challenge. We sampled Black and Latinx colleagues in the UK and in North America about their real lived experience. This research is actually the core of how we plan to drive change through various workshops at LSAG, both in the United States and in the UK, and also through this podcast series. A sense of belonging, which we just talked to Balbir about, was the biggest theme that came out of the entire research. You facilitated the session where we discussed the sense of belonging while bringing your authentic self to work. Yet through the line of sight and the Illuminate program, we discover from the employees that people are not able to bring their authentic self, like it's exactly what you were talking about earlier. Instead, they change the way they look, talk, or even their names in order to fit the mold. So what are the implications when somebody that does that? What does that do to a person, their mental health, their performance, and sense of self?
Well, thank you. It's been really fascinating in terms of hearing, you know, from everyone around this particular topic. And to kind of respond to that, it means everything. You know, if you don't have a sense of belonging, and when I think of that word belonging, belonging means ownership, it means connection, it means that whole sense of feeling part of something. And if you don't feel part of something, and if you don't own anything, there's a disconnect that absolutely takes place. And one of the things that we know through the work that we've been doing for many, many years now at the Diversity Practice is that there's almost this psychological contract that takes place. It might sound like, Carol, we think you're great, but here's the thing, leave about, we'd say maybe 55% of who you are at the door. And don't worry, we'll make up the rest of that. And then that psychological contract, I am shifting, I'm code switching, I'm changing how I speak, I'm shortening my name. And to the point that you're making earlier on, Bobby, it is exhausting. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely exhausting. And when we did a piece of research called Different Women, Different Places. And one of the things we asked was, what did your career mean to you? And we compared Black, Asian, and ethnically diverse women and their white female counterparts. For their white female counterparts, being part of a community and in relationship at work was really, really important. For different women, only 18% of them said being part of a community was important to them, because they didn't feel kind of part of the organizations they were working for. And they described it as being, I always feel like a square peg trying to fit into a round hole. Mm. We know that organizations are talking a lot now about mental health. Yeah. And what we also know from research that's been done by Mind and other fairly prominent researchers in the areas of mental health is that there are higher incidences of mental health for Black, Asian, and ethnically diverse men and women in organizations. And why is that? Exclusion, not feeling part of, not feeling that sense of belonging. And I think equally, and what I think is even has a more disastrous impact, is that for all the effort of trying to fit in, what we find is that the progression and the achievement and the lived experiences of those particular population is quite negative. So for all that effort, you're not getting anything by way of return, right? So those are just some of the issues and why it is important to really pay close attention to belonging.
So how does that negative sense of belonging then impact their job satisfaction and performance?
Well, I guess if you look at, you know, your employee engagement survey, what you're going to find, and I can say this across all the sectors that I've had the privilege of working in, is that the levels of engagement for Black, Asian, ethnically diverse leaders, racially diverse leaders, will be less. And where you find that it is consistent with, you know, white men and women in the organization, please go to that particular department and find out why. Mm. You know, what is going on? You know, what is going on there? You know, how well led are, you know, are the people in that particular part of the business? But 9 times out of 10, your employee engagement surveys will tell you that. And the reality is, you know, when I was an academic, I taught knowledge management. You bring your intellectual capital. That's what you bring to your world of work. If you're disconnected and demotivated, that has a direct impact on productivity. Mm-hmm. There is no doubt about it. It's a no-brainer. So these things have real consequences in terms of the competitive advantage of every organization.
So what can organizations do then?
I think they need to do more. And so I think more by way of recognizing, as I said kind of previously, this is a non-negotiable. It's mm-hmm. not a nice to have. And actually, in a post-truth world, in the world that we're living in now, where diversity, equity, and inclusion has been almost sidelined, it's become a political issue now. Yeah. I think organizations really need to live their purpose and need to ensure that this remains kind of top of the agenda. Mm-hmm. Because without your people, without talented individuals, then, you know, who are you as an organization? I think that's the question. You know, that also becomes a question. To the point you were making around networks, I think continuing to invest in networks is critical, because mm-hmm. that's the place, one of the many places you should feel a sense of belonging. But I think even more importantly, for too long, we've been focusing our attention on fix the woman, fix the Black Asian ethnic diverse leader. That's the focus. The focus, if we are going to really ensure that our organization live the values of inclusion and belonging, absolutely critical that we focus on the majority. That's why you're here, Nick.
Yeah, I think that's back to that same point. We're looking at me again. I think that's absolutely right. And I think the difficulty with the majority, and you mentioned at the beginning about the wicked problem. The thing that has almost amazed me more than anything through the way that you sort of led us through and through your academic and personal experiences is how this is not created by 10% of the population who are deeply against people who are different to them. It is accepted by 80% of the people who normally state, they go, I stand for equality.
Right.
I like diversity. It matters to me. I've had friends of different colors all my life. You know, what are you talking about? But I think it's the lack of willingness or the fear of talking about these things, back to your point earlier, until you actually have the conversations, you don't really know how it feels to be in some of these different places. And I think that the challenge that we have now is to say, people need to do more than say, oh, I stand for this, and then I can let it happen. I need to proactively make sure it is happening. I need to go back inside my own behavior each day to see what I can move a bit forward. Is that I'd have another conversation that I wasn't going to have. And I think then we can add some pressure for good from the ally side, which is definitely needed, because this problem, as you've explained to us before, Carol, hasn't really improved, like some of, particularly in the BLAT and Latinx space, like it has in some of the other areas. And I think without this focus from the coordinated group, from the top down, I mean, we need the executive sponsorship, but from the bottom up as well. So everybody's days are very consciously aware of these problems. We all want an equitable company. We want a company where people enjoy their days as much as I do. If people are hiding things or not bringing themselves, they can't be doing that. And we need to be proactively seeking it out, because, as you said, Belbir, sometimes you even hide it from yourself. And that's one thing that has been amazing to realize, is we've all been hiding things. I miss lots of things because of my subconscious doing things. People have been missed that they've relied on sponsors when they weren't aware. We're all not as aware as we think we are, even however well-meaning we are.
Right.
And I think that is what I've really taken away from this program, and it's been a real eye-opener.
But that's why I think, like you were saying, it's not about fixing the minority. Mm-hmm. It's how do you bring leaders on the journey as well. Mm-hmm. So leaders from the majority, but just leaders more generally.
Yes.
And I think that's key to the organizational change. Mm-hmm. Is the more you have leaders involved in that conversation, being on the journey. So this program actively, the Illuminate program actively tries to do that. So it brings leaders and teams together, and it brings people from inside and outside together.
Yeah.
So you sort of got this shared experience, and the sponsorship builds, but the understanding builds. And the more you get that collective understanding across the organization, the better. The challenge for us in things like this is, how do you scale it?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You could do this relatively small program. How do you scale that? How do you take some of those principles organization wide?
Yeah. Well, we're trying through the podcast and the workshop, but I wanted to also hit on one more point that you guys were talking about. People are afraid of talking about this.
Yeah.
How do we break that stereotype? How do we encourage, like, to break through that fear?
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by the notion of fear. And I often think that if you put yourself in the shoes of a racially diverse leader, to walk into a room where you're the only one is probably one of the most frightening experiences ever. And so I kind of want to challenge this notion of fear. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that having conversations, instead of normalizing, I'm afraid, let's normalize that this is important for us to do, and let's have the conversations that we need to have.
Yeah.
Growth doesn't happen when you're in your comfort zone.
Right.
Nothing changes. It's important to, you know, and as leaders, we kind of push through, get up from the comfort zone, push through the zone of fear so that we can grow and learn. Right? If we're just sitting in this space where everything is cozy, the transformation you talked about, Balbi, will never happen.
Yeah, I think that's entirely right. So I think you do need to give people permission to be wrong in some of the statements they make and the assumptions they may have, and just say, okay, I got that wrong, it's fine. So you give permission to get that wrong, but also the expectation to be uncomfortable. So we expect you to have those uncomfortable conversations. So you could be in a majority group and you're just uncomfortable going there. You're like, oh, I don't know. I think I'm out of my comfort zone. It's like, well, it's tough. You have to go there. So I think both permission to get it wrong and the, you know, the expectation that we want to have an uncomfortable conversation, I think is helpful.
So Carol, can you tell us how organizations can create a space for employees to be their authentic selves?
You know, I worked with Nick. It wasn't the first time kind of having worked with leaders, you know, from the white majority who've never explored their identity, you know, don't know what it actually means to be white and male and able-bodied. And kind of stepping into that was a revelation. And I guess my challenge has always been to organizations and, to all of us, how can you include and create a sense of belonging for others if you haven't explored what that means to you? Mm-hmm. And so I just want to emphasize just how critically non-negotiable all of us, this is about all of us, not some of us. Right. It's about every single one of us really going on that particular journey, and not just going on the journey, but that it leads to an outcome. Yeah. Right? It's not good enough this time next year. No. We're kind of sitting here and having the same conversation, and some of your indicators have not shifted and haven't changed. So there's got to be some big ambition here as well.
I want to thank you, each and one of you, for being here today and for all your insights.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Ripple Conversations. We've explored the importance of belonging and authenticity in the workplace, and we've heard some powerful stories and insights. As we wrap up, I want to leave you with a call to action. Think about how you can contribute to creating a sense of community and belonging in your own environment. Challenge yourself to learn more about the experiences of those around you and take actionable steps to support diversity and inclusion. Start conversations, listen with empathy, and be an advocate for change, whether it's through mentorship, allyship, or simply being more mindful in your daily interactions. Every action counts. Together, we can create ripples of change that foster a more inclusive and authentic world. Thank you for joining us for today's episode. Until next time, I am complete.